inside the cliff. Unsurprising, since the island consists of little more than a straight column of undifferentiated rock, with some of the caverns natural and others carved by unknown means. All of it is surprisingly beautiful, too, with artfully vaulted ceilings, aqueduct arches running along many walls, and enough torch and lantern light that none of it feels claustrophobic. Sion doesn't like the feel of all that rock hovering overhead and waiting to crush them the next time there's a shake. But if she must be stuck in a death trap, at least this one is cozy. The Maelvites have put them up in a guest house, or rather, a house that's been abandoned for a while and isn't in too much disrepair. She and Alabaster have been given food from the communal fires, access to the communal baths, and a couple of changes of clothing in the local style. They've even been allotted a modicum of privacy, though this is difficult, as curious children keep peeking through their carved, curtainless windows to giggle at them and then run away. It's almost cute. Sion sits now on a pile of folded blankets, which seem to have been made for the purpose of sitting, watching as Alabaster winds a length of clean rag around his injured shoulder, holding the other end in his teeth for a moment to tighten it into a bandage. He could ask her for help, of course, but he doesn't, so she doesn't offer. "They don't trade much with the mainland," he continues as he works. "All they've really got to offer is fish, and the mainland coaster comms have plenty of that. So Maelv raids. They attack vessels along the main trading routes, or extort comms for protection from attacks. Yes, their attacks. Don't ask me how it works. That's just what the headman told me." It sounds precarious. What are they even doing here? Sion looks around at the rough carved walls and ceiling. It's an island. I mean, these caverns are nice, sort of, until the next shake or tsunami wipes the whole thing off the map. And like you said, there's no way to grow food. Do they even have store caches? What happens if there's a season?
Then they'll die, I guess.
Baster shrugs, mostly to settle his newly tied bandage.
I asked them that, too, and they just sort of laughed the question off. You notice the silence sits on top of a hot spot.
Sion blinks. She hadn't noticed, but then her orogeny is as numb as a hammered finger. His is, too, but the numbness is relative, apparently.
How deep?
Very. It's unlikely to blow anytime soon or ever. But if it ever does, there will be a crater here instead of islands. He grimaces.
Course, that's if a tsunami doesn't get the island first, close as we are to the plate boundary here. There's so many ways to die in this place. But they know about all of them. Seriously. And as far as I can tell, they don't care. At least they'll die free, they say.
Free of what? Living?
Sansa.
Alabaster grins when Sion's mouth falls open.
According to Harless, this comm's part of a string of small island comms all along the archipelago. That's the word for the group of islands, if you didn't know, that extends from here down almost to the Antarctic, created by that hot spot. Some of the comms in that chain, this one included, have been around 10 seasons or longer.
Bullshit.
And they don't even remember when Maelv was founded and, carved. So maybe it's older than that. They've been around since before Sansa. And as far as they know, Sansa either doesn't know or doesn't care that they're here. There were never a next.
He shakes his head.
The coaster comms are always accusing each other of hosting the pirates. And no one with sense sails this far out. Maybe nobody knows these island comms are out here. I mean, they probably know the islands exist, but they must not think anyone would be stupid enough to live on them.
No one should be. Cyan shakes her head, amazed at these people's audacity. When another calm child pokes her head above the windowsill, blatantly staring at them, Cyan can't help smiling, and the girl's eyes grow round as saucers before she bursts out laughing, babbles something in their choppy language, and then gets pulled away by her comrades. Brave, crazy little thing. Alabaster chuckles.
She said, "The mean one actually smiles."
Rusting brat. "I can't believe they are crazy enough to live here," she says, shaking her head. "I can't believe this island hasn't shaken apart, or been blown to slag, or been swamped 100 times over." Alabaster shifts a little, looking cagey, and by this, Cyan knows to brace herself.
"Well, they survive in large part because they live on fish and seaweed, see? The oceans don't die during a season the way the land or a smaller body of water does. If you can fish, there's always food. I don't think they even have store caches." He looks around, thoughtful. "If they can keep the place stable against shakes and blows, then I guess it would be a good place to live."
"But how could they?"
"Ragas."
He looks at her and grins, and she realizes he's been waiting to tell her this.
"That's how they've survived all this time. They don't kill their ragas here. They put them in charge, and they're really, really glad to see us."
The Stone Eater is folly made flesh. Learn the lesson of its creation, and beware its gifts. From Tablet 2, The Incomplete Truth, Verse 7. 17. Damaya, Infinality. Things change. There is an order to life in the fulcrum, but the world is never still. A year passes. After Crack disappears, Mashish never speaks to Damaya again. When he sees her in the corridors or after inspection, he simply turns away. If he catches her looking at him, he scowls. He doesn't catch her often, though, because she doesn't look at him often. She doesn't mind that he hates her. He was only a potential friend anyway. She knows better now than to want such a thing, or to believe that she will ever deserve one. Friends do not exist. The fulcrum is not a school, grits are not children, origins are not people. Weapons have no need of friends. Still, it's hard, because without friends, she's bored. The instructors have taught her to read as her parents did not, but she can only do so much of that before the words start to flip and jitter on the page, like pebbles during a shake. The library doesn't have a lot of books that are just for fun and not utilitarian anyway. Weapons do not need fun, either. She's only allowed to practice her orogeny during applied, and even though she sometimes lies in her bunk and imagines the lessons over again for extra practice, an origin's power is in her focus after all. There's only so much of that she can do, too. So to occupy her free hour, and any other hour when she isn't busy or sleeping, she wanders around the fulcrum. No one stops grits from doing this. No one guards the grit dormitory during free hour or afterward. The instructors do not enforce a curfew. Free hour can be free night if a grit's willing to struggle through the next day sleepy. Nor do the adults do anything to prevent the grits from leaving the building. Any child caught in the ring garden, which is off limits to the unringed, or approaching the gates that lead out of the fulcrum, will have to answer to the seniors. But anything less, and the sanctions will be mild, bearable. The usual punishment befitting the crime, that's it. No one gets expelled from the fulcrum after all. Dysfunctional weapons are simply removed from the stockpile, and functional weapons should be smart enough to take care of themselves. Thus, Damaya keeps to the fulcrum's least interesting areas in her wanderings. But this leaves plenty to explore. because the Fulcrum Complex is huge. Apart from the garden and the Grit training grounds, there are clusters of living quarters that house the Ringed Origins, libraries and theaters, a hospital, and places where all the adult Origins do their work when they're not off on assignments beyond the Fulcrum. There are also miles of obsidian-paved walkways and greenland that hasn't been left fallow or kept prepared for a possible fifth season. Instead, it's landscaped. It's just there to be pretty. Demaya figures that means someone should look at it. So it is through all this that Demaya walks, in the late hours of the evening, imagining where and how she will live once she joins the ranks of the Ringed. The adults in this area mostly ignore her, coming and going about their business, talking with each other or muttering to themselves alone, focused on their adulty things. Some of them notice her, but then shrug and keep walking. They were Grits once. Only on one occasion does a woman stop and ask, "Are you supposed to be here?" Demaya nods and walks past her, and the woman does not pursue. The administrative buildings are more interesting. She visits the large practice chambers that the Ringed Origins use, great amphitheater-like halls, roofless with mosaic rings etched into the bare ground and concentric circles. Sometimes there are huge blocks of basalt lying about, and sometimes the ground is disturbed, but the basalt is gone. Sometimes she catches adults in the chambers practicing. They shift the blocks around like children's toys, pushing them deep into the earth and raising them again by will alone, blurring the air around themselves with deadly rings of cold. It is exhilarating and intimidating, and she follows what they're doing best as she can, though that isn't much. She's got a long way to go before she can even begin to do some of these things. It's Maine that fascinates Demaya most. This building is the core of the Fulcrum Complex, a vast domed hexagon larger than all the other buildings combined. It is in this building that the business of the Fulcrum gets done. Here, Ringed Origins occupy the offices and push the papers and pay the bills, because, of course, they must do all of these things themselves. No one will have it said that Origins are useless drains on the resources of humanness. The Fulcrum is fiscally and otherwise self-sufficient. Free hour is after the main working hours for the building, so it's not as busy as it must be during the day. But whenever Demaya wanders the place, she notices that many of the offices are still lit with candles and the occasional electric lantern. The Guardians have a wing in Maine, too. Now and again, Demaya sees burgundy uniforms amid the clusters of black, and when she does, she turns the other way. Not out of fear. They probably see her, but they don't bother her, because she's not doing anything she's been told not to do. It is as Shafa told her. One need only fear Guardians in specific, limited circumstances. She avoids them, however, because as she grows more skilled, she begins to notice a strange sensation whenever she's in a Guardian's presence. It is a buzzy feeling, a jagged and acrid sort of thing. Something more heard and tasted than zest. She does not understand it. But she notices that she is not the only Origin to give the Guardians a wide berth. In Maine, there are the wings that have fallen into disuse because the Fulcrum is larger than it needs to be, or so Demaya's instructors have told her when she asks them about this. No one knows how many Origins there were in the world before the Fulcrum was built. Or perhaps the builders thought that more Origins would survive childhood to be brought here than is proven true over time. Regardless, the first time Demaya pushes open a conspicuous-looking door that no one seems to be using and finds dark, empty hallways beyond it, she is instantly intrigued. It's too dark to see very far within. Nearby, she can make out discarded furniture
and storage baskets and the like, so she decides against exploring immediately. The chance that she could hurt herself is too great. Instead, she heads back to the grit dorms, and all through the next few days, she prepares. It's easy to take a small glass knife used for cutting meat from one of the meal trays, and the dorm has plenty of oil lanterns that she can appropriate without anyone caring, so she does. She makes a knapsack out of a pillowcase that she nabs while on laundry duty. It has a tattered edge and was in the discard pile. And finally, when she feels ready, she sets forth. It's slow going at first. With the knife, she marks the walls here and there so she won't get lost. Until she realizes, this part of Maine has exactly the same structure as the rest of Maine. A central corridor with periodic stairwells and doors on either side leading into rooms or suites of rooms. It's the rooms that she likes most, though many of them are boring. Meeting rooms, more offices, the occasional space large enough to serve as a lecture hall, though mostly these seem to be used for storage of old books and clothing. But the books. A good many of them are the frivolous sort of tales that the library has so few of. Romances and adventures and bits of irrelevant lore. And sometimes the doors lead to amazing things. She discovers a floor that was once apparently used as living quarters. Perhaps in some boom year when there were too many origins to house comfortably in the apartment buildings. For whatever reason, however, it appears that many of the inhabitants simply walked off and left their belongings behind. Tamaya discovers long, elegant dresses in the closets, dry-rotted. Toys meant for toddlers. Jewelry that her mother would have salivated to wear. She tries on some of it and giggles at herself in the fly-specked mirror, and then stops, surprised by the sound of her own laughter. There are stranger things. A room full of plush, ornate chairs, worn and moth-eaten now, all arranged in a circle to face each other. Why? She can only imagine. A room she does not understand until later, after her explorations have taken her into the buildings of the fulcrum that are dedicated to research. Then she knows that what she has found is a kind of laboratory, with strange containers and contraptions that she eventually learns are used for analysis of energy and manipulation of chemicals. Perhaps geomasts do not deign to study orogeny, and origins are left to do that for themselves, too? She can only guess. And there is more, endlessly more. It becomes the thing she looks forward to the most in any given day after applied. She gets in trouble now and again in learning creche because sometimes she daydreams of things she's found and misses questions during quizzes. She takes care not to slack off so much that the teachers question her, even though she suspects they know about her nighttime explorations. She's even seen a few of them while she wanders, lounging about and seeming oddly human in their off hours. They don't bother her about it, though, which pleases her mightily. It's nice to feel as if she has a secret to share with them, even though she doesn't, really. There is an order to life in the fulcrum, but this is her order. She sets it, and no one else disrupts it. It is good to have something she keeps for herself. And then one day, everything changes. The strange girl slips into the line of grits so unobtrusively that Demaya almost doesn't notice. They're walking through the ring garden now, on their way back to the grit dormitory after applied, and Demaya is tired but pleased with herself. Instructor Marcusite praised her for only icing a 2-foot torus around herself while simultaneously stretching her zone of control to an approximate depth of 100 feet. "You're almost ready for the first ring test," he told her at the end of the lesson. If this is true, she could end up taking the test a year earlier than most grits, and first of any in her year group.
Because Demaya is so caught up in the glow of this thought, and because it's the evening of a long day, and everyone's weary and the garden is sparsely populated and the instructors are chatting with each other, almost no one sees the strange girl slip into line just ahead of Demaya. Even Demaya almost misses it, because the girl has cleverly waited until they're turning a curve round a hedge. Between one step and another, she is there, matching their pace, keeping her gaze forward as most of the others do. But Demaya knows she was not there before. For a moment, Demaya is taken aback. She doesn't know all the other Grits well, but she does know them on sight, and this girl isn't one of them. Who is she, then? She wonders whether she should say something. Abruptly, the girl glances back and catches Demaya staring. She grins and winks. Demaya blinks. When the girl turns away again, she keeps following, too flustered now to tattle. They proceed through the garden and into the barracks, and then the instructors depart for the evening, leaving the Grits to free hour before bedtime. The other kids disperse, some going to fetch food from the sideboard, the newer ones dragging off to bed. A few of the more energetic Grits immediately start some sort of silly game, chasing each other around the bunk beds. As usual, they ignore Demaya and anything Demaya is doing. So Demaya turns to the Grit, who is not a Grit. "Who are you? Is that really what you want to ask?" The girl looks honestly puzzled. She is Demaya's age, tall and lanky, and more sallow-skinned than most young Sanzids, and her hair is curled and dark, instead of stiff and gray. She's wearing a Grit's uniform, and she's actually tied her hair back the same way the other Grits with loose hair have done. Only the fact that she's a total stranger breaks the illusion. "I mean, you don't actually care who I am, do you?" the girl continues, still looking almost offended by Demaya's first question. "If I were you, I'd want to know what I was doing here." Demaya stares at her, speechless. In the meantime, the girl looks around, frowning a little. "I thought a lot of other people would notice me. There aren't that many of you. What, 30 in this room? That's less than in my creche. And I would notice if somebody new suddenly popped in. Who are you?" Demaya demands, half hissing the words. Instinctively, though, she keeps her voice down, and for added measure grabs the girl's arm, hauling her over to an out-of-the-way corner where people are less likely to notice. Except everyone's had years of practice at paying no attention to Demaya, so they don't. "Tell me, or I yell for the instructors." "Oh, that's better," the girl grins. "Much more what I was expecting. But it's still weird that you're the only one." And then her expression changes to one of alarm when Demaya inhales and opens her mouth, clearly preparing to shout. Quickly she blurts, "My name's Beanoff. Beanoff. And you are?" It's such a commonplace sort of thing to say, the pattern of courtesy that Demaya used for most of her life before coming to the fulcrum, that she answers automatically. Demaya Strong. She has not thought of her use name, or the fact that it no longer applies to her in so long, that she is shocked to almost hear herself say it. "Demaya, what are you doing here? Where did you come from? Why are you?" She gestures helplessly at the girl, encompassing the uniform, the hair, Beanoff's existence.
"Shh! Now you want to ask a million questions?"
Beanoff shakes her head. "Listen, I'm not going to stay. And I'm not going to get you in trouble. I just need to know. Have you seen anything weird around here somewhere?" Demaya stares at her again, and Beanoff grimaces.
"A place. With a shape. Sort of. A big... a thing that..."
She makes a series of complicated gestures, apparently trying to pantomime what she means. It is completely nonsensical. Except it isn't.
Not entirely. The fulcrum is circular. Damaya knows this, even though she can only get a sense of it when she and the other Grits transit the Ring Garden. The Black Star looms to the west of the fulcrum's grounds, and to the north, Damaya has seen a cluster of buildings tall enough to peek over the obsidian walls. She often wonders what the inhabitants of those buildings think, looking down on Damaya and her kind from their lofty windows and rooftops. But more significantly, Maine is circular too, almost. Damaya has wandered its dark hallways often enough by now, with only a lantern and her fingers and Sesapine to guide her, that when she sees Binoff make a hexagonal shape with her hands, she knows at once what the strange girl means. See, Maine's walls and corridors aren't wide enough to account for all the space the building occupies. The building's roof covers an area at its heart, into which its working and walking spaces do not extend. There must be a huge empty chamber within. Courtyard, maybe, or a theater, though there are other theaters in the fulcrum. Damaya has found the walls around this space and followed them, and they are not circular. There are planes and angles, 6 of them. But if there is a door that opens into this hexagonal central room, it isn't anywhere in the unused wings, not that she's found yet. A room without doors, Damaya murmurs without thinking. It is what she started calling the unseen chamber in her head on the day she realized it must exist. And Binoff inhales and leans forward.
Yes, yes. Is that what it's called? It's in that big building at the center of the Fulcrum complex? That's where I thought it might be. Yes.
Damaya blinks and scowls. Who are you? The girl's right. That's not really what she means to say. Still, it covers all the salient questions at once. Binoff grimaces. She glances around, thinks a moment, sets her jaw, and finally says, Binoff Leadership Humanus. It almost means nothing to Damaya. In the fulcrum, no one has use names or comm names. Anyone who was leadership before being taken by the Guardians isn't anymore. The Grits who were born here or brought in young enough have a Raga name, and everyone else is required to take one when they earn their first ring. That's all they get. But then intuition turns a key here and makes various clues click together there. And suddenly Damaya realizes Binoff is not merely expressing misplaced loyalty to a social convention that no longer applies. It does apply to Binoff, because Binoff is not an origin. And Binoff's not just any still. She's a leader, and she's from Humanus, which makes her a child of one of the most powerful families in the stillness. And she has snuck into the fulcrum, pretending to be an origin. It's so impossible, so insane, that Damaya's mouth falls open. Binoff sees that she understands and edges closer, dropping her voice. I told you, I'm not going to get you into trouble. I'll go now and find that room, and all I ask is that you don't tell anyone yet. But you wanted to know why I'm here. That's why I'm here. That room is what I'm looking for. Damaya closes her mouth. Why? I can't tell you. When Damaya glares, Binoff holds up her hands. That's for your safety and mine. There's things only leaders are supposed to know, and I'm not even supposed to know them yet. If anyone learns I told you, then... She hesitates. I don't know what they would do to either of us, but I don't want to find out. Crack. Damaya nods absently. They'll catch you. Probably. But when they do, I'll just tell them who I am. The girl shrugs with the ease of someone who has never known true fear in her life. They won't know why I'm here. Someone will call my parents and I'll be in trouble. But I get in trouble all the time anyway.
If I can find out the answers to some questions first, though, it'll be worth it. Now, where's that room without doors?
Demaya shakes her head, seeing the trap at once.
I could get in trouble for helping you. She isn't a leader or a person. No one will save her.
You should leave however you got here, now. I won't tell anyone if you do.
No. Vinov looks smug. I went to a lot of trouble to get in here. And anyway, you're already in trouble because you didn't shout for an instructor the minute you realized I wasn't a grit.
Now you're my accomplice.
Right?
Demaya starts, her stomach constricting as she realizes the girl is right. She's also furious, because Binov is trying to manipulate her, and she hates that.
It's better if I shout now than let you blunder off and get caught later.
And she gets up and heads for the dormitory door. Binov gasps and trots after her quickly, catching her arm and speaking in a harsh whisper.
Don't. Please. Look. I have money. 3 red diamond chips and a whole alexandrite. Do you want money?
Demaya's growing angrier by the minute.
What the rust would I need with money?
Privileges, then. The next time you leave the fulcrum, we don't leave.
Demaya scowls and yanks her arm out of Binoff's grip.
How did this fool of a still even get in here?
There are guards, members of the city militia at all the doors that lead out of the fulcrum.
But those guards are there to keep origins in, not stills out. And perhaps this leader girl with her money and her privileges and her fearlessness would have found a way in even if the guards had tried to stop her.
We're here because it's the only place we can be safe from people like you. Get out!
Suddenly, Demaya has to turn away, clenching her fists and concentrating hard and taking quick, deep breaths, because she's so angry that the part of herself that knows how to shift fault lines is starting to wander down into the earth. It's a shameful breach of control, and she prays none of the instructors sense it, because then she will no longer be thought of as almost ready for the first ring test. Not to mention that she might end up icing this girl.
Infuriatingly, Binov leans around her and says,
Oh, are you angry? Are you doing orogeny? What does it feel like?
The questions are so ridiculous, her lack of fear so nonsensical, that Demaya's orogeny fizzles.
She's suddenly not angry anymore, just astonished. Is this what all leaders are like as children? Palelo was so small that it didn't have any. People of the leader use caste generally prefer to live in places that are worth leading. Maybe this is just what Eumenesian leaders are like. Or maybe this girl is just ridiculous.
As if Demaya's silence is an answer in itself, Binov grins and dances around in front of her.
I've never had a chance to meet an origin before. The grown-ups, I mean. The ones with rings wear the black uniforms, but not a kid like me.
You're not as scary as the Lorist said you'd be. But then, Lorists lie a lot.
Demaya shakes her head.
I don't understand anything about you.
To her surprise, Binov sobers.
You sound like my mom.
She looks away for a moment, then presses her lips together and glowers at Demaya in apparent determination.
Will you help me find this room or not? If you won't help, at least don't say anything.
In spite of everything, Demaya is intrigued by the girl, by the possibility of finding a way into the room without doors, by the novelty of her own intrigue. She has never gone exploring with someone before.
It is exciting.
She shifts and looks around uncomfortably, but a part of her has already decided, hasn't it?
Okay, but I've never found a way in, and I've been exploring Maine for months.
Maine? Is that what the big building is called?
And yes, I'm not surprised. There probably isn't an easy way in. Or maybe there was once, but it's closed off now.
Oblivious as Demaya stares again, Beanoff rubs her chin.
I have an idea of where to look, though. I've seen some old structural drawings. Well, anyway, it would be on the southern side of the building, ground level.
That is not in the unused wing, inconveniently. Still, she says, I know the way. And it's heartening to see Beanoff brighten at these words.
She leads Beanoff the way she usually goes, walking the way she usually walks. Strangely, perhaps because she is nervous this time, she notices more people noticing her. There are more double takes than usual, and when she spies instructor Galena by chance on her way past a fountain, Galena, who once caught her drunk and saved her life by not reporting it, he actually smiles before turning his attention back to his chatty companion. That's when Demaya finally realizes why people are looking. Because they know about the strange, quiet grit who goes wandering all the time. They've probably heard about Demaya via rumors or something, and they like that she's finally brought someone else with her. They think she's made a friend. Demaya would laugh if the truth weren't so unfunny.
Strange, says Beanoff as they walk one of the obsidian paths through one of the lesser gardens.
What?
Well, I keep thinking everyone's going to notice me, but instead, almost no one's paying attention. Even though we're the only kids out here.
Demaya shrugs and keeps walking.
You'd think someone would stop us and ask questions or something. We could be doing something unsafe.
Demaya shakes her head. If one of us gets hurt or someone finds us before we bleed out, they'll take us to the hospital. And then Demaya will have a mark on her record that might prevent her from taking the ring test. Everything she does right now could interfere with that. She sighs.
That's nice, says Beanoff. But maybe it's a better idea to stop kids before they do things that might get them hurt.
Demaya stops in the middle of the lawn path and turns to Beanoff.
We aren't kids, she says, annoyed.
Beanoff blinks.
We are grits, imperial origins in training. That's what you look like, so that's what everyone assumes you are. Nobody gives a damn whether a couple of origins get hurt.
Beanoff is staring at her.
Oh, and you're talking too much. Grits don't. We only relax in the dorms, and only when there are no instructors around. If you're going to pretend to be one of us, get it right.
All right, all right.
Beanoff holds up both hands, as if to appease her.
I'm sorry, I just...
She grimaces as Demaya glares at her.
Right. No more talking.
She shuts up, so Demaya resumes walking. They reach Main and head inside the way Demaya always does. Only this time she turns right instead of left and heads downstairs instead of up. The ceilings are lower in this corridor, and the walls are decorated in a way she has never seen before, with little frescoes painted at intervals that depict pleasant, innocuous scenes. After a while she begins to worry, because they're getting closer and closer to a wing that she has never explored and doesn't want to. The Guardians.
Where on the south side of the building?
What?
Preoccupied with looking around, which makes her stand out even more than the endless talking did, Beanoff blinks at Demaya in surprise.
Oh, just somewhere on the south side.
She grimaces at Demaya's glare.
I don't know where. I just know there was a door, even if there isn't one anymore. Can't you...
She waggles her fingers.
Origins are supposed to be able to do things like that.
What? Find doors?
Not unless they're in the ground.
But even as Demaya says this, she frowns because, well, she can sort of assess where doors are by inference. Load-bearing walls feel much like bedrock, and door frames feel like gaps in strata, places where the pressure of the building against the ground is lesser. If a door somewhere on this level has been covered over, would its frame have been removed too? Maybe. But would that place not feel different from the walls around it? She's already turning, splaying her fingers the way she tends to do when she's trying to stretch her zone of control farther. In the applied crucibles, there are markers underground, small blocks of marble, with words etched into one surface. It takes a very fine degree of control to not only find the blocks, but determine the word. It's like tasting a page of a book and noticing the minute differences between the ink and the bare page and using that to read. But because she's been doing this over and over and over under the instructor's watchful eye, she realizes that the same exercise works for this purpose.
"Are you doing orogeny?"
Binov asks eagerly.
"Yes, so shut up before I ice you by accident."
Thankfully, Binov actually obeys, even though Sessing isn't orogeny, and there's no danger of icing anyone. Demai is just grateful for the silence. She gropes along the walls of the building. They are like shadows of force compared to the stolid comfort of rock. But if she's delicate, she can trace them. And there, and there, and there, along the building's inner walls, the ones that enclose that hidden chamber, she can feel where the walls are interrupted. Inhaling, Demaya opens her eyes.
"Well?"
Binoth's practically salivating. Demaya turns, walking along the wall a ways. When she gets to the right place and stops, there's a door there. It's risky opening doors in occupied wings. This is probably someone's office. The corridor is quiet, empty, but Demaya can see lights underneath some of the doors, which means that at least a few people are working late. She knocks first. When there is no answer, she takes a deep breath and tries the latch. Locked.
"Hang on," Binoff says, rummaging in her pockets.
After a moment, she holds up something that looks like a tool Demaya once used to pick bits of shell out of the kurga nuts that grew on her family's farm.
"I read about how to do this. Hopefully it's a simple lock."
She begins fiddling with the tool in the lock, her face set in a look of concentration. Demaya waits a while, leaning casually against the wall and listening with both ears and Sesapine for any vibration of feet or approaching voices, or worse, the buzz of an approaching guardian. It's after midnight by now, though, and even the most dedicated workers are either planning to sleep in their offices or have left for the night, so no one troubles them during the agonizingly long time it takes for Binoff to figure out how to use the thing.
"That's enough," Demaya says after an eternity. If anyone comes along and catches them here, Demaya won't be able to play it off. "Come back tomorrow and we'll try this again."
"I can't," says Binoff.
She's sweating and her hands are shaking, which isn't helping matters. "I gave my nurses the slip for one night, but that won't work again."
"I almost got it last time. Just give me another minute."
So Demaya waits, growing more and more anxious, until finally there is a click and Binoff gasps in surprise.
"Was that it?"
"I think that was it."
She tries the door and it swings open.
"Earth's flaming farts! It worked!"
The room beyond is indeed someone's office. There's a desk and two high-backed chairs, and bookcases line the walls. The desk is bigger than most, the chairs more elaborate. Whoever works here is someone important. It is jarring for Demaya to see an office that's still in use after so many months of seeing the disused offices of the old wings. There's no dust, and the lanterns are already lit, though low wick. So strange. Binoff looks around, frowning. No sign of a door within the office. Demaya brushes past her, going over to what looks like a closet. She opens it, brooms and mops and a spare black uniform hanging on the rod.
That's it,
Binoff curses aloud. No, because Demaya consists that this office is too short from door to far wall to match the width of the building. This closet isn't deep enough to account for the difference. Tentatively, she reaches past the broom and pushes on the wall. Nothing. It's solid brick. Well, that was an idea.
Oh, right.
Binoff shoulders in with her, feeling the walls all over the closet and shoving the spare uniform out of the way. These old buildings always have hidden doors leading down into the store caches, or... There aren't any store caches in the Fulcrum. Even as she says it, she blinks, because she's never thought about this before. What are they supposed to do if there's a season? Somehow, she doesn't think the people of Eumenes will be willing to share their food with a bunch of origins.
Oh. Right.
Binoff grimaces.
Well, still, this is Eumenes, even if it is the Fulcrum. There's always...
And she freezes, her eyes widening as her fingers trip over a brick that's loose. She grins, pushes at one end until the other end pops out. Using this, she pulls it loose. There's a latch underneath, made of what looks like cast iron.
There's always something going on beneath the surface,
Binoff breathes. Demaya draws near, wondering.
Pull it. Now you're interested.
But Binoff indeed wraps her hand around the latch and pulls. That whole wall of the closet swings loose, revealing an opening beyond, lined with the same brick. The narrow tunnel there curves out of sight almost immediately, into darkness. Demaya and Binoff both stare at it, neither taking that first step.
What's in there? Demaya whispers.
Binoff licks her lips, staring into the shadowed tunnel.
I'm not sure. Bullshit.
It's a shameful thrill to talk like this, like one of the ringed grown-ups.
You came here hoping to find something.
Let's go see first. Binoff tries to push past her, and Demaya catches her arm. Binoff jumps, arm tightening beneath Demaya's hand. She glares down at it as if in affront. Demaya doesn't care.
No. Tell me what you're looking for, or I'll shut this door after you and start a shake to bring the wall down and trap you in there. Then I'll go tell the guardians.
This is a bluff. It would be the stupidest thing on Father Earth to use unauthorized orogeny right under the noses of the guardians, and then to go tell them she's done it. But Binoff doesn't know that.
I told you. Only leaders can know this.
Binoff tries to shake her off. You're a leader. Change the rule. Isn't that also what you're supposed to do? Binoff blinks and stares at her. For a long moment, she is silent. Then she sighs, rubs her eyes, and the tension goes out of her thin arm.
Fine. Okay.
She takes a deep breath.
There's something, an artifact, at the heart of the Fulcrum.
What kind of artifact?
I'm not sure. I'm really not.
Binoff raises her hands quickly, shaking off Demaya in the process, but Demaya's not trying to hold her anymore.
All I know is that something's missing from the history. There's a hole, a gap.
What?
In history.
Binoff glares at Demaya as if this is supposed to mean something.
You know, the stuff the tutors teach you? About how Eumenes was founded?
Demaya shakes her head. Beyond the line she barely remembers in Kresh about Eumenes being the first city of the old Sansa Empire, she cannot remember ever hearing about its founding. Perhaps leaders get a better education.
Binoff rolls her eyes. But explains. There was a season,
the one right before the empire was founded, was wandering, when north suddenly shifted and crops failed because birds and bugs couldn't find them. After that, warlords took over in most areas, which is what always used to happen after a season. There was nothing but Stone Lord to guide people then, and rumors, and superstition. And it was because of rumors that no one settled in this region for a really long time. She points down at their feet. Eumenes was the perfect place for a city. Good weather, in the middle of a plate, water, but nowhere near the ocean, all that. But people were afraid of this place, and had been for ages, because there was something here.
Demaya's never heard anything like this.
What?
Beanoff looks annoyed.
That's what I'm trying to find out. That's what's missing.
Imperial history takes over after the wandering season. The madness season happened only a little while afterward, and Warlord Varisha, Emperor Varisha, the first emperor, started Sons of En. She founded the empire here, on land that everyone feared, and built a city around the thing they were all afraid of. That actually helped keep Eumenes safe in those early years. And later, after the empire was more established, somewhere between the Season of Teeth and the Breathless Season, the Fulcrum was founded on this site. On purpose. On top of the thing they were all afraid of.
But what? Demaya trails off. Understanding at last.
The histories don't say what they were afraid of.
Precisely. And I think it's in here.
Beanoff points toward the open door.
Demaya frowns. Why are only leaders supposed to know this?
I don't know. That's why I'm here. So are you coming in with me or not?
Instead of answering, Demaya walks past Beanoff and into the brick-lined corridor. Beanoff curses, then trots after her, and because of that they enter together. The tunnel opens out into a huge dark space. Demaya stops as soon as she feels airiness and breath around her. It's pitch black, but she can feel the shape of the ground ahead. She catches Beanoff, who's blundering forward in a determined sort of way despite the dark, the fool, and says, "Wait, the ground's pressed down up ahead." She's whispering, because that's what one does in the dark. Her voice echoes. The echo takes a while to return. It's a big space.
Pressed? What?
Pressed down. Demaya tries to explain it, but it's always so hard to tell Stills things. Another origin would just know.
Like there's been something really heavy here.
Something like a mountain.
The strata are deformed and there's a depression, a big hole. You'll fall.
Rusting fuck, Beanoff mutters.
Demaya almost flinches, though she's heard worse from some of her cruder fellow grits when the instructors weren't around.
We need some light.
Lights appear on the ground up ahead, one by one. There is a faint clicking sound, which echoes as well, as each activates. Small, round, white ones near their feet, and in twin lines as they march forward, and then much larger ones that are rectangular and butter yellow, spreading outward from the walkway lights. The yellow panels continue to activate in sequence and spread, slowly forming an enormous hexagon and gradually illuminating the space in which they stand. A cavernous atrium with six walls, enclosed by what must be the roof of Maine high above. The ceiling is so distant they can barely make out its radiating spoke of supports. The walls are featureless, the same plain stone that comprises the rest of Maine, but most of the floor of this chamber has been covered over in asphalt, or something very like it. Smooth, stone-like but not stone, slightly rough, durable. At the core of it, however, there is indeed a depression. That is an understatement. It's a huge tapering pit with flat-sided walls and neat, precise edges. Six of them,
cut as finely as one cuts a diamond.
Evil Earth,
Demaya whispers as she edges forward along the walkway to where the yellow lights lime the shape of the pit.
Yeah,
says Beanoff, sounding equally awed.
It is stories deep, this pit, and steep.
If she fell in, she would roll down its slopes and probably break every bone in her body at the bottom. But the shape of it nags at her, because it is faceted, tapering to a point at the very bottom. No one digs a pit in that shape, why would they? It would be almost impossible to get out of, even with a ladder that could reach so far. But then, no one has dug this pit. She confesses that. Something monstrously heavy punched this pit into the earth and sat in the depression long enough to make all the rock and soil beneath it solidify into these smooth, neat plains. Then whatever it was lifted away, clean as a buttered roll from a pan, leaving nothing but the shape of itself behind. But wait. The walls of the pit are not wholly smooth. Demaya crouches for a closer look, while beside her, Beanoff just stares. There, along every smooth slope, she can see thin, barely visible, sharp objects. Needles? They push up through fine cracks in the smooth walls, jagged and random, like plant roots. The needles are made of iron. Demaya can smell the rust in the air. Scratch her earlier guess. If she fell into this pit, she would be shredded long before she ever hit the bottom. I wasn't expecting this, Beanoff breathes at last. She's speaking in a hush, maybe out of reverence or fear. Many things, but not this. What is it? Asks Demaya. What's it for? Beanoff shakes her head slowly. It's supposed to be hidden, says a voice behind them, and they both jump and whirl in alarm. Demaya is standing closer to the edge of the pit, and when she stumbles, there is a terrible, vertiginous moment in which she's absolutely certain she's going to fall in. In fact, she relaxes and doesn't try to lean forward or rebalance herself or do any of the things that she would do if she had a chance of not falling. She is all over heavy, and the pit yawns with inevitability behind her. Then Beanoff grabs her arm and yanks her forward, and abruptly she realizes she was still a good 2 or 3 feet from the edge. She would only have fallen in if she'd let herself fall in. This is such a strange thing that she almost forgets why she nearly fell. And then the guardian comes down the walkway. The woman is tall and broad and bronze, pretty in a carved sort of way, with ashblow hair shorn into a bristly cap. She feels older than Shafa, though this is difficult to tell. Her skin is unmarked, her honey-colored eyes undented by crow's feet. She just feels heavier in presence. And her smile is the same unnerving combination of peaceable and menacing as that of every guardian Demaya has ever seen. Demaya thinks, I only need to be afraid if she thinks I'm dangerous. Here is the question, though. Is an origin who goes where she knows she should not dangerous? Demaya licks her lips and tries not to look afraid. Beanoff doesn't bother, darting a look between Demaya and the woman and the pit and the door. Demaya wants to tell her not to do whatever she's thinking of, making a break for it, likely. Not with a guardian here. But Beanoff is not an origin. Maybe that will protect her, even if she does something stupid. Demaya, the woman says, though Demaya has never met her before. Shafa will be disappointed. She's with me, Beanoff blurts, before Demaya can reply. Demaya looks at her in surprise, but Beanoff's already talking, and now that she's started, it seems as though nothing will stop her. I brought her here, ordered her here.
She didn't even know about the door and this place until I told her.
That isn't true, Demaya wants to say, because she'd guessed that the place existed. Just hadn't known how to find it. But the guardian is looking at Beanoff curiously, and that's a positive sign, because nobody's hands have been broken yet.